Hello, Pod. I'm Chris Hewitt, and welcome to a very special Empire Podcast interview. Special? Ben Schwartz. You know him. Either you've seen him being hilarious in the likes of Parks and Recreation, where he played the anarchic one-man comedy bomb that was John Ralphio, or you've seen him in The After Party, or Renfield, or Standing Up, Falling Down, or Space Force. Or you've heard him because he's one of the most in-demand voice actors around. He's the voice of Sonic in the Sonic the Hedgehog movies, for goodness sake. And if that weren't enough, he's also the voice of BB-8 in Star Wars. Kind of. But that's not all. He's also a prodigious and prolific writer who's constantly working on a script or 10. And if that weren't enough, he's one of the finest improvisational comedians on the planet. On the planet. Which is why he's coming here to the good old United of Kingdom and the Royal Albert Hall, no less, on Sunday, May 19th, with his improv show, Ben Schwartz and Friends. And as a result of said show, at the Royal Albert Hall, of course, I was delighted to invite Ben back onto the podcast for only the second time. The first was for Standing Up, Falling Down, which is a really lovely comedy drama he made with Billy Crystal a few years ago. Check it out if you haven't already seen it. But we only got about 15 minutes or so back then due to the restrictions of junket time. This time, though, Ben was not on the clock, he was on Zoom, and so we chatted for around 45 minutes or so about all kinds of things. We chatted about his love of improv, which is an art form that I'm fascinated with and frightened by in equal measure. We chatted about his time spent on Star Wars, either treading on Adam Driver's foot whilst being a stormtrooper, or writing lines for 3PO, or sometimes both. We talked about Sonic, of course. We talked about the future and possible plans to direct. We talked about Ben Schwartz and Friends and how tickets are now on sale at rejectedjokes.com, that's Ben's website, or the Royal Albert Hall website, royalalberthall.com, which is the Royal Albert Hall's website. Oh, and we talked about his IMDb mini biography, which is, quite frankly, a disgrace and needs to be updated immediately. But most of all, we just chatted and I loved every second, and I hope you guys do too. So here's Ben Schwartz and Friend. Enjoy. All right, a lot of pressure on this intro, so I better not fuck it up.
Let's see what happens.
Oh God. Oh Jesus.
Take your time. You're already screwing it up. I can already feel you're going to screw it up is my worry.
I'm going to write down my intro.
Okay.
I've forgotten how to type.
It's okay. God. Take your fingers off that. You're touching M&Ms. You're not even touching the keyboard. You're literally typing M&M.
All right. Usually what I say is something like, delighted to be joined in the Empire Podcast by Ben Schwartz, but I don't think that.
Don't. This is the big intro you've been talking about. You've been telling me for years you want to try out a new version of your intro, and I'm almost certain this is it. Chris, let your mind go and introduce me. Pretend I'm not even here. Chris, introduce me right now.
Okay.
Here comes everybody. You're getting an exclusive, the brand new Chris Empire Film Podcast intro. Here it comes. Chris Hewitt.
You know him from stuff he's been in. We all love him. It's Ben Schwartz, everybody. Hello, Ben.
Wow. Bumpy. What a bumpy landing. We barely got that plane in.
I feel like I nailed it.
Okay. If you're happy with it, we can move on. We don't need another.
But Ben, I am genuinely delighted to have you on the podcast.
No, I'm excited to be here. I'm an Empire fan.
Why I haven't even read that off my thing. I didn't even write that down. That is something I'm saying right now to you from the heart. I'm delighted to have you on the Empire podcast.
Oh, that's very kind. Thank you very much.
How are you?
Honored to be here. I'm good. Everything is pretty good. I'm very excited to come to the UK. To come to the UK is always exciting, but to perform there, it's only my second time ever performing there, so I'm very excited.
That is very, very exciting, because I went back. You were on the show a few years ago during the pandemic before Standing Up, Falling Down, and I went back because I am nothing if not thorough.
Yeah, I went back. But you could tell by that intro.
You've seen him in things.
You've seen him in things. He's a person, I think. His name, Ren Lortz.
I came this close to just reading out your IMDb mini profile. By the way,
Wikipedia says he was born in the Bronx.
Have you read your IMDb mini profile, by the way, Ben? There's a profile?
I know it lists your things, but I've never seen profile.
There's a mini biography. And
oh, no. I'm looking it up right now. I'm terrified.
It needs to be updated.
Oh, no.
Because
I'm looking it up right now.
Ben Schwartz is known for playing Sean Ralphio in the American comedy series Parks and Recreation. He plays an annoying yet lovable character who thinks he is a player and a baller and often uses insurance money and his father's money to buy whatever he wants. Sean Ralphio was created for Schwartz when he met co-creator of the show, Michael Schur, and he often improvised his lines. And that's it.
That's it?
That's it. That's it.
Oh, wow. All right. I don't know who updates those, but Chris, if you want, you can update it right now.
If I could remember how to type, I absolutely would, but okay. I will in due course. But that feels to me like something that you maybe wrote a few years ago and then forgot to.
I 100% would never have called myself a douchebag player. Is that what I call myself? An annoying
player
yet lovable.
And a baller.
I would really be like, I don't want to be called an annoying yet lovable character. That's like, I'm sure that character does fall in that pot. But yeah. Come on.
I love stuff like this. I love looking at mini biographies because someone is clearly invested enough in you to write this and then they just give up. There's a certain point where they just go, I'm not going to bother updating this. I'm not going to mention
it. Or they wrote it 12 years ago and then they're like, that's it. Nobody else. We got it. We understand who this guy is.
There's a chance they may have died.
Oh, you think so? While writing?
It's why it finishes mid-sentence, I think.
You don't think my loving yet adorable character killed them, do you?
It's entirely possible. It is entirely possible. But I was going through our last interview, and which was in 2021, I think it was, 2020, 2021, something like that.
Was it Billy?
No, it was just yourself, and you mentioned that you wanted to come to London to do a show, and hey presto, you have manifested that into existence. Well done, sir.
Thank you, brother. Hammersmith the Pile last year. Royal Albert Hall. Come on, Chris. This is like, you know, it's the legend venue. It's like for it's literally, I only have two more of the stones to get the Infinity Gauntlet. So that's one of the last two. And then I only have one more. And then I'm going to take a year off starting in October. I think I'm going to chill from improv for a bit just because I've been touring so much. But that show is really special to me. And I can't wait to get in there. And man, that London audience last year was so good. It was so good. So I'm really excited to see everybody again.
Excellent, excellent stuff. So so tell people about Ben Schwartz and Friends. What can they expect?
It'd be my honor. What it is, it's a long-form improv show. So if you ever see, I have these specials online called Middleditch and Schwartz on Netflix, if anybody's ever seen them, that's what long-form improv is. It's a little bit different than short-form, which is like Who's Line It Anyway, which is more short little games. This one is, I'm going to come out of the audience, I'm flying through my friends from LA, which means that I'm not making any money off this show. Flying through my friends from LA to come here. And then we're going to interview someone in the crowd, a random person. We're going to talk to them about the most exciting day or night they've ever had in their lives. And then that's it. And the audience participation is done. And then we will create almost like a one-act play, or sometimes a three-act play, a one-act play where it's like everything that we got from that interview, we're going to make up on the spot. Every character, every word is going to be made up on the spot. And when if it's done well, people in the crowd will swear that we wrote it, or they'll think it's like, it feels like a good magic trick if you do it well. I'm bringing really good improvisers with me too, because these are big shows. So we're doing Royal Albert Hall, and then we go over to do Dublin, and then we come right back. That's my big UK tour, or my big European tour.
That's amazing. Can you say who you're bringing over?
I try to make it like a surprise, but each person has been on television or something like that. Everybody's done something fun, and they're all, I consider, some of the best improvisers. Everybody that's coming over has done multiple Ben Schwartz and Friends shows. So like, and what I'm doing, because people came to Hammersmith the Pile last year, is every member is new. Nobody that came last year is coming this year. All three people are new.
That's amazing. I'm fascinated by improv. I paid once for I did one online course, so I think I know a bit about it.
Whoa, online improv sounds absolutely destructive.
It was horrific. It was absolutely horrific. It
improv
was
in the beginning can be so bad, Chris. It could be so bad. So the idea of doing that over Zoom, please.
Trying to have a connection with someone, it was not good. But
what did you learn? Tell me the things that you learned in that thing.
I learned absolutely nothing, Ben, if I'm completely honest with you. But I learned that I was fascinated by it. I've always been fascinated by it because it's something that appeals to me. In terms of sharpening interview skills, such as they are. But I've always been fascinated by how you get involved in it. Like, at what point did you really gravitate towards it? Was this something that you always grew up wanting to do?
Yeah, that's a great question. When I was in college, I was always the person when I was in high school that I was too nervous to like audition for the musical because I was afraid to fail. And people tell me I'm not a good singer or something like that. So I never did it. I never did a lot of those performing things. I sang in groups because I love singing, but never like the musical. And then when I was in college, I had a girlfriend at the time that forced me to audition for the improv show, the improv mm-hmm. team in college. It was a short form team. So very much like Whose Line Is It Anyway games. Mm-hmm. And it was like, and my group of friends, I was considered very funny, but you know, like the funny people at the school telling me if I could be in the group or not was very too nervous for me. So I never did it. Then I was forced to. Junior year, I auditioned, had a terrible audition, but got on the team and then slowly became one of the reasons that a lot of the people were coming to the shows. And that became very exciting. Then my confidence started raising. And then when my confidence raised, I was able to take more risks. And then slowly I'm finding my voice. And then right after that, I went to the Upright Citizens Brigade Theater because Amy Poehler came from there. Matt Walsh, Matt Besser, Ian Roberts. And I was an intern because I couldn't afford classes. So I did the garbage, did the recycling, and I got free classes in return. And I started taking classes there, and then I started going through the levels and starting to really get it. And, I'm dedicated. I've been doing this for 22 years now. So I feel like a lot of times when people see improv, it's like what you said, like a class show or like some people trying for the first time. But there's a bunch of us that have been doing it for over two decades, three decades, four decades now. And I'm so thrilled to show people what we can do and what this forum looks like for people who dedicate a lot of time to it, stuff like that.
So did you devote yourself to reading up about it and reading up about the history of it?
The history that I knew is from the people. So like Del Close inventing it in Chicago and coming to New York. And then UCB kind of learned over there from Second City Improv Olympic Annoyance. And then they brought it over here. And then that's where I started learning. I learned from the people who were taught by Del. But Del Close always had like a little like guru piece of the theaters at UCB, wherever Upright Citizens Brigade, wherever we were. But the book I read was Truth in Comedy with Sharna Halpern and Del Rote, I think. Right. That's the only book that I read, but it had Farley in it. You know what I mean? It was like crazy. And now UCB has its own books that Will Hines wrote, I think, and Joe Wenger. Maybe we just will. But so at the beginning, my knowledge was like, I love that Second City book. I love that SNL book where so many people came in. So I read all those things. And then slowly just, you know, improv is so much about just doing it. You got to do it over and over again and learn your voice and learn when to push and learn when not to push and all that stuff.
Absolutely. The thing I love about Del Close, I'm sure you know this, is that he's in The Untouchables because he was based in Chicago. So they had a lot of Chicago.
Someone told me that.
Yeah.
And I think is he in Ferris Bueller's Day Off as a teacher or something like that?
I think he might be. Yeah, he might be. But there's a scene in The Untouchables where someone tries to bribe Elliot Ness. It's the... you know, I'm going to leave this briefcase on the table. I'll turn around and the briefcase is gone. Then, hey, 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 we have a deal. That's Del Close.
That's amazing.
He was Yes Andy with Kevin Costner even back then.
I love it. The idea of Kevin Costner doing improv is a very beautiful idea. I love it. I did a movie with Nick Cage and I was like, I improvised in one of the scenes and he was so into it. I was like I played like a bad guy in it. And I was talking about how I illegally was moving around like endangered species. Like I was improvising some stupid thing. And then afterwards he comes up to me dressed as Dracula, mind you. He was playing Dracula in this film.
This is Renfield, by the way.
Renfield, right. Empire, of course, you guys know. And so he goes, Ben, the way you invoked the rhinoceros in that last scene, I was like, oh. And I'm trying to get him to improvise with me because I think he'd be amazing. He was great.
He would be amazing, but would you survive?
Like physically?
Yeah.
God, I heard the last person that improvised a scene with Nick Cage was writing my Wikipedia page or my IMDb profile.
They just carked it mid-sentence.
I got to act with him, and then got to become, you know, a little bit friends with Nick. He's the best. He's exactly what you want him to be, and he's great. I like called him and been like, "You're amazing in Dream Scenario." I just think he's pretty phenomenal, man.
He is so good, and I imagine he'd be someone who'd be really, really good at improv as well. Like I imagine
so too.
Most of his performances are someone who's very alive and in the moment and doing shit that I'm sure he wasn't planning on doing when he got to the set.
Yeah. By the way, yeah.
Is that essentially what it is for you when you're?
It matters what the director is. If the director's like, "Hey, we want it word perfect," which means kind of do it exactly the script, and you do the script, no problem, it's great. And then oftentimes what happens if I'm hired is we do it scripted and they're like, "Ben, go have fun." And then like I go like with Parks and Rec, there was something called fun runs. That's where you kind of go off and do whatever you want. And then slowly, like once directors start trusting me that I'm not like, I don't go like crazy and my improv is usually based in truth and in the scene, then it's like they'll play and then they have the choice. If they want to use it, they can. But we always get it as is and then they let me off and do my thing.
So can we go back to the beginning of your journey, so to speak? Yeah. So was your experience your very first, I don't know, did you a class, first of all? And was your experience analogous to mine, which was obviously over Zoom with people who also didn't know what they were doing? And it was very tentative.
It was so, my first class was an intensive class, which means we did it every day for 7 days, as opposed to doing it within 2 months. We did it every day, 3 hours for 7 days. And it was intense and everybody was not good and I was bad. I remember I kept trying to make jokes and the teacher's like, "This isn't where you just make jokes. You got to like build the scene up and together create something." It's like a ping pong match where you're like going back and forth. And that took me a second to realize and stuff like that. And so it's like, it was slow. And I remember my first show, I was so nervous. I didn't do a scene. I was on the back wall the whole time. And then finally, when it was time to do a scene, I just played like an army guy with a gun, but I didn't say anything. I was just there. And I was just too nervous. And then slowly got back in my own. But it starts tough. That's why I think like before we did those Middle-aged and Schwartz specials, there were very few ways for people to see what long-form improv was.
Yeah.
ASCAT, Amy did ASCAT with UCB. There's a TJ Day documentary. But like when we did Middle-aged and Schwartz, those specials, it was to be like, "Hey, we want to show you that this can be done in bigger theaters and this can be done in just like, you know, how Kevin Hart and Chris Rock and Chappelle all have specials, all these huge, John Mulaney have huge specials." I was like, if we have a place where we can have improv as a special, then people can kind of see it from, not to say that we're better than other people, just saying that we've been doing it for a while. We can see it to people who've like done it a while. So I think that was a big deal. And now when I tour, like, you know, people are very, some people have seen those specials or just improv in general. Long form improv has become way bigger than it ever was. And we were feeling that during Middle-aged and Schwartz. I'm definitely feeling that during Ben Schwartz and Friends.
So, I mean, I'm flying blind here a little bit because I love improv, but I know of the Harold, but I'm still, if you put a gun to my head, I couldn't tell you exactly what it is. So what is it?
The Harold is a form that you learn at Upright Citizens Brigade at the very beginning, which is very rigid in that it is three. This is so crazy. We don't do the Harold. When you come to one of my shows, it's just a fucking go crazy. Let's see what happens best. It's and then we connect everything at the end. But by the way, doing it, it's like almost in karate. I remember people being like, "You got to learn these very basic moves first before you can go." So the Harold, so
you do the crane kick. Yeah, that's what you do.
First thing out is I do unlimited crane kicks. I just go towards people with unlimited crane kicks. And then slowly, the other person on my team is doing that little, what was that thing, man? Like, tuk, 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 in Karate Kid Part 2, the little drum. The Harold is a form which has structure. Our form doesn't really have structure, but, it is three two-person scenes. So two people come up, they do a scene, two people come up, do a scene, two pieces. Then it's a group scene that has nothing to do with what just happened. And then it's a second beat of the two-person scenes you just saw. So like if it's, you know, you're supposed to be making it bigger and then another group game and then everything kind of ties together either with three more scenes or just whatever we can get everything connected.
That seems like a lot of work.
It's so funny that that's what we all did for so long because it's great. That, by the way, maybe not. It's great to do it at the beginning to learn, but then once you can do whatever you want, you like don't ever go near that again. But you have elements of it. Like we're so good at calling stuff back because we did it for so long. We're so good at group games because we did so many of them. So it's like that, it really teaches you the form and the structure, teaches you how to play really well with teammates. And then you use that when you move forward. Or some people keep doing the Harold, I'm sure.
Yeah. Is it muscle memory in a way when you're wrapping stuff up and you're bringing everything together and you're tying up all the loose ends?
The only thing I have on stage is a clock that tells me what time it is. Not even a countdown clock. It just tells me what time it is. And in my head, when we've been on stage for 55 to 60 minutes, I'm like, how can I bring back as much stuff as I can to wrap the scene up? Or how can I bring back the gem of an idea from a scene that's happened that could connect characters that the audience would be like, whoa, what? It all happened for a reason. So it's like, and then like our show usually wraps up around 70, 75 minutes. So it's like to start that process at 55 minutes when you're like, all right, guys, let's start building and start figuring out where we're going to go and how we're going to end this. And then when that clock gets close to 70, 75, I'm looking for the funniest way to end it. And if I'm not coming up with it, if I see one of my cast members does a perfect line that connects things, then I call the show. I'm the one that always calls the show and most of the edits and stuff. So that's it. So it's very exciting. And then when you get going and you have a good show, it's pretty unbeatable.
And then it's gone. It's done. It's so ephemeral. But
the bummer is it only makes sense in that, like, if you try to tell your friends what happened, oh my God, Ben was a giraffe, but he loved cocaine and went, it's like, what? But like, it all makes sense because it came off a real story that someone told and we're building characters together and it elevated to that. It didn't start there. And then I've never recorded them, but I'm slowly starting to record all the audio for my shows. So in my head, if I ever want to release all these shows, I can do it audio, or I've slowly like gotten someone to record some of the last ones just to have, because I'm going to end this tour in October. And I was like, God, I've done shows for 100,000 people. I performed in front of 100,000 people. And I have no evidence of it at all. So I'm slowly getting people. We won't be able to do it in the UK because it's so expensive to do it over there. But it's like, I'm slowly just getting anything on camera now because I was like, I'm starting to release them on my Instagram rejected joke. So if you want to wonder what we do, little snippets of scenes of our 75-minute show are on my Instagram rejected joke or TikTok or all that stuff.
You hear that, Ben? That is the sound of people buying tickets right now.
Oh my God,
for the
really?
Show. Yeah.
For Royal Abroad. They're going to rejectedjokes.com right now.
That's exactly what they're doing. But here's the twist. The money goes to me. That's
fine.
That's
as long as people come to the show, I don't care.
You've already paid for your flights. Mm-hmm. it's all happening. All right. So let's say, for example, that you were updating your IMDb mini biography.
Can't wait.
Is Sean Ralphio focused? I mean, let's be honest. It's
100%. It's 100% John Ralphio focused. That's correct.
So what would you add if you were
myself. I'm really bad about talking about myself. I wouldn't even know. I think I'd probably write, put Middles and Schwartz in there, put After Party in there somehow. I just write credits, but then I'm like, just go to the IMDb, you're already here. <It's> like,
so it just finishes off. He often improvises lines. For the rest, go to the website you're already on.
He does improv shows, but it's not shown here on IMDb because this is an internet movie database.
I can't believe you wouldn't mention Sonic, for example, in your mini biography.
I would, of course I would. I mean, that would be, it's one of my favorites.
You got a lead with that. You're burying the lead, Ben.
Sonic 2, Sonic 3, all that stuff. I'd probably say voiceover work, DuckTales, Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, Randy Cunningham, and then Sonic. I do love animation, so the fact that I get that voice those things is very important to me. I love that.
Amazing. All right, so we got Sonic in there. There is one other thing about the IMDb that occurred to me when I was looking earlier on, is that occasionally we look at the trivia section of someone on the IMDb.
Is it the same thing? Is it someone from 20 years ago?
Well, I have to say, it's slightly disappointing again, because there's 5 bits of trivia about you. So
I can't wait.
We do a thing occasionally on the show called the IMDb Bunker, where we take trivia from the IMDb and we check whether it was true or not.
Great. Because I just tried to find it. I don't even know where to find trivia. Right. I see news. I don't see where trivia is.
I'm on my phone, so I've got it here. But I think this is all going to be true, but it's all so factual. All right. So was a freelance writer for The Late Show with David Letterman's Monologue and SNL's Weekend Update.
That's true. I probably wrote that. You probably could write your own trivia.
Started as an improv and sketch performer at the Upright Citizens Brigade Theater.
True.
There you go. Created the website rejectedjokes.com to highlight his short films and writing.
This is, I guarantee you, and it's embarrassing to say this, I wrote this when nobody knew who I was. I was trying to get anybody to know when they went to me to know, like, kind of that I act and I write. Because this is how I write. It's just like a sentence, a fact,
right.
Get out quick
before
getting embarrassed.
I like that.
This is embarrassing to admit, but I probably wrote these 20 years ago.
Okay, but you didn't write your mini biography. Your story is falling apart. Co-created.
I don't think there was biographies back 20 years
ago. Yeah, okay, pull the other one. Co-created/wrote the book Grandma's Dead, Breaking Bad News with Animals, published by HarperCollins. I love the fact that you or whoever wrote this puts published by HarperCollins in there. That's very
100%,
important.
100%. This is from 20 years ago because I've since sold 4 books and movies and TV shows. And the only thing that's talking about is the first thing I ever sold when I was a kid. This is me trying to get anybody to care about me.
And the last bit of trivia on here is performed, and this might date this slightly, performed at the 2007 Montreal Just for Laughs Festival in the show The Lineup, a sketch showcase directed by Bob Odenkirk, hosted by David Cross and Bob Odenkirk.
I got to tell you a story. This bio was made in 2007 is what we just figured out. If that last thing is a year, and I don't think that festival exists anymore.
It does not. It has stopped. Just
maybe.
For Laughs.
I think Just for Laughs, I think, went under. Maybe not.
No.
I know Aspen went under. Maybe I'm wrong.
Oh,
maybe I'm
God.
Wrong.
Okay. Well, hopefully.
But that
still
would have been the
around.
Biggest thing in my life. That would have been the biggest thing in my life had 2007.
Well, yeah.
I mean, to LA yet, that would have been huge.
Directed by Bob Odenkirk. I mean, that must be a hell of a thing.
I know, but also, by the way, the reason why I was exciting back then was because it was Mr. Show Bob Odenkirk.
Yes.
It wasn't, you know, better, Breaking Bad didn't exist yet.
That's right, yeah. Yeah, Breaking Bad started in 2008, of course.
What's your favorite movie, Chris?
Favorite movie is Evil Dead 2, Ben.
Wow.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, anything else?
Let me see. Well, I'm very obvious and boring, so things like John Carpenter's a thing, Star Wars, usual stuff.
Okay.
What
when we're offline, there's a movie I sold with Sam Rockwell. Sam Rockwell and I are going to do a movie together for Searchlight. We just hired a director, got a great director attached, but I don't think I'm allowed to talk about it. But you will be very pleased. You'll be very pleased. And I will tell you what it is when we're stopped recording. But that movie I've been writing for years, and I hope it gets made. We keep getting closer and closer. So, I mean, it's Sam Rockwell. Who cares that I'm in it? Sam Rockwell, you got to make it. So it's like, it's a really fun and exciting and movie, but I can't wait to tell you about it. When we're not recording, I'll tell you about it.
All right, excellent. So you and Sam go back, don't you? You go back a ways.
I've done 4 things. I did a movie called Better Living Through Chemistry with him. I did a movie called Blue Iguana, which we shot in the UK with him. I did a Drunk History with him, and then I've been close friends with him for a long time.
That's amazing. But he strikes me. I've interviewed Sam a couple of times in the pod, and I was on set of one of his movies, and I'm probably not allowed to say what it was. Recently, and I got to watch him do some improv on camera, and he was so sharp.
He's amazing. He's also just like, talk about someone who's like loves his craft. If you look at his scripts, he has notes everywhere. He's read every line 1,000 times. This movie, while I've been writing it, we've done 2 table reads, just me and him, just to hear the words and see how I can change. Like, he's like, to me, like Philip Seymour Hoffman, him. It's like, you know, those guys, those like amazing New York actors, or I mean, even you can think about theater actors like John Malkovich is one of those guys, or like Willem Dafoe, who you like idolize, Billy Crudup's over in that group, and it's just like there's so many great. He's like one of I think he's a really special actor, and he's an amazing person.
Oh man, so is this something that I guess it speaks to the idea of Ben Schwartz and Friends is something that you're very much in charge of how it goes. I'm not saying you're a control freak, Ben, but is this something that you know, you're taking charge of things? You're writing stuff, maybe directing stuff as well in terms of films?
Listen, I guess I don't take charge because someone else is writing these profiles. These are bios on IMDb. But I've been very lucky. The way that I thought about it always was I can't control my acting career. I have to wait for auditions to come or offers to come. I can always be writing. And I started as a writer. I started as a freelance monologue writer for Letterman for a Weekend Update. Facts and Jokes, and back when fax machines were around. So it's like I wrote that book. I wrote for any magazine that would let me. I did an article for Toy Fair once, for Wizard Magazine once. I did anything that would let me write. Like I really hustled. I still do, but like, so I always wrote. And then I sold my first movie through Imagine to Universal. Then I sold my second movie. Then I wrote a movie for Paramount, which was a remake of the movie Soap Dish. But I did it with an all Latino cast. And then that got on the blacklist, and all of a sudden it's like a fancy list out here. And that Franklin Letter runs this great thing. And then all of a sudden now I'm allowed to write movies for places because now I'm on this list. So like I kind of always been trying to write, but now I'm in a place where I'm trying to write for myself as opposed to before I was writing for other people. And now it's like, I'm in an office right now for an animated show that I sold. Will it get made? Who knows? I have a live action show that I just sold that I'm on a draft on right now. I got this Rockwell movie. So it's a lot of writing right now with hopes that people greenlight them all. Like I've sold them to the companies, picked the right places that I think will make it. Now I just keep writing until they're like, we're going to make it or we're not going to make it.
Amazing. And directing?
I directed this thing called The Earliest Show, which is on YouTube. And the only things that I put myself up, the only things that I want to direct are like, there's an independent movie I have that we're going out with soon that's very personal to me. And in my head, I don't want anybody else to mess it up. If someone's going to fuck it up, I want it to be me. You know what I mean? Like, I don't want to give it to a different director and then not do what I was hoping. I'd rather be the one that messes it up. So if I fail, it's all on me. That movie's I'm going to direct. And there is an outline for an improvised movie, not a movie about improv, but a movie where like the movie's structured, but me and my friends are going to improvise within the scenes. Right. And I would direct that because I have a handle on exactly how I want that to go. But the other stuff, like the Rockwell movie, it's a world that I don't know how to direct. And so I'm out. Or like the pilot of this episode or the pilot of this. I'm very good at understanding, like, this person can do this better than me, this person can do better than me. Oh, I think I can do this one, or I think I can do this one. But I'm very good at, like, only the ones that I'm certain that I need to direct, I'll direct. The other ones, people can do it better than I can.
That's interesting, because there's a long tradition in American TV of if a show runs for long enough, that they eventually, the actors start directing stuff. And
I would want to direct my live action show, but I don't want to direct the first season or the first six, because I'm writing it. You know what I mean? I'm going to be writing all the episodes. I'm going to be I just don't even know where I'd have time to prep. But I think me being a producer, I'm a producer on all of them. So it's like, I'll be able to get my notes and talk to the director before everything.
Oh, man. That's exciting. But would you direct, say, for example, a Sonic movie? Would you go, you know what?
No,
it's too my time.
I can't. I know I couldn't do it. I would need to. I mean, Jeff is so good at it. By the way, it's so hard. He's directing actors talking to tennis balls or talking to fake Sonics and figuring out the eye line. Like, there's so much to do in those Sonic movies. He's so good at it. I just know that I don't have the skill set to do that. Not yet.
Come on, Ben. You do. You do.
This third Sonic movie, by the way, is awesome. It is massive. I could never direct it. It is massive. And Jeff crushed it.
Do you get to go along and see it as it's being directed, or?
No, I don't get to go on set. I do get to see the footage for anybody else. Cause I do my, first of all, I do, I lay a vocal of all the lines. They have it. And then after that, now we have all the footage. So we're done filming live action. Now they'll put the footage, they'll make an assembly, and then I'll start doing some extra lines, improvising a little bit, tweaking stuff. The best part about me doing the voice and them not animating my face till, you know, way later, is that we could change aspects of the story, that things that don't make, that we need to make clearer, things we can make funnier by me just getting in a booth. It costs no money to get me in a booth and record. It costs so much money to get a stage and, you know, film everybody. But it's so easy when you have the lead character, one of the leads, be someone who's voice there, so we can keep tweaking till almost, you know, until we have to lock the face and the mouth, because we can even keep tweaking, and also we can keep tweaking when it's on my back. I've also been hired for different movies to write dialogue to make things funnier when it's on people's backs, or like to create jokes, like, or like Star Wars, I got to punch up some C-3PO stuff because his mouth is right here, so all they have to do is make that red line or whatever it is. I don't even know if there is a red line for C-3PO. Is there?
No, it's just a little thing that bleeps. Yeah.
So the coolest thing is I get to do that. And then I do these things and I would record them. And then he would do them. And I would hear C-3PO say these lines. And it would be the coolest feeling in the universe.
What's a 3PO line you wrote?
There's a couple. One from 7, which was... you're a big Star Wars fan. So it's because JJ is the best person in the world. JJ is the kindest person in the world. He'll also let me be a stormtrooper. I love him to death. I'm a stormtrooper in 7. Also, there's a scene where I'm following right behind Adam Driver when he's playing Kylo Ren, and I like flat tired him. You know what that is? When you hit the person's back of their foot. So it's like, what, you by mistake step on the foot? Because the stormtrooper thing is this. You can't see anything.
No peripheral vision.
Stunts in there. Oh my God. There's no up, down, or left, right. It's crazy. So like one take, I hit the back of his thing. And I was like, I'm so sorry. I'm so sorry. But there's a line in 7 where Han Solo sees Leia for the first time in the movie. And C-3PO goes in front of them. And this is before he's when he had a red arm. Mm-hmm. And I think, I forget the exact line I wrote, but it's something like, he says hello and he doesn't say hi back. And he goes, oh, you must not recognize me because of the arm. And like that little thing. In 9, I got 3 good ones in there. And one that I tried to get in there, but it was too insane. Where this is the one that didn't get in. I can find the ones that got in. They're on my, I have them as voice notes. But there's a scene where they all go sucked down into the sand trap and there's this big monster there. And before you see the monster, and you'll probably know the exact wordage for all this before I butcher it, but there's all these like dead bodies of like bones and stuff like that. And they turn around and, the line that I did get in that is when they fall down, Oscar Isaac says, are you okay? Are you okay? And to Ray or whoever else is down there. And then C-3PO in the background. So what I get to do is I get to see the scene and see where I can add a joke. And JJ's like, is there room there? And I added him saying, you didn't ask me, but I'm okay. Like, I just thought that was so funny that this petty C-3PO is like, he asked everybody else and C-3PO in the background is like, oh, hello, you didn't ask me, but I'm okay. Anyway, the line I tried to get in that didn't work out, which I have here, me and Stefan Grube, who is the editor, but that was one of the editors, and who's also the best. And also made the trailer for 7, which was one of the best trailers I've ever seen in my life. When the Falcon comes, oh my God. But anyway, the bit that I had was they go through this all these dead bone things and the guy, this big monster comes up and they're trying to figure out what to do. And I have C-3PO in the background. I pitch it, didn't get in. Where he goes, he looks at the skeleton and goes, throw him the bones! It did not get in.
They don't want the word bones in Star Wars. That's not good. They don't want that. There's connotations, Ben.
By the way, absolutely, JJ made the right idea. What a terrible, it was so stupid. It made us laugh so hard. It would be so stupid, but it's very on brand for C-3PO to be like, you didn't mention my name, but I'm okay.
Now, what is 3PO's IMDb trivia page like? That's what I want to know. But
says that he performed in the Montreal Just for Laughs Comedy Festival where Bob Odenkirk was the...
he was directed by R5-D4 in that concert. But did you go back and did you like regress in a way to the... to the method that you used when you were first writing and pitching jokes? Did you fax these things to JJ Abrams to make sure I'm gonna go next door, JJ, just give me 5 minutes.
I got really lucky in that he asked me to voice BB-8, so I helped do the voice of BB-8 and the beeps and bops for that, which started as a whole process. And because of that, I think Harrison Ford got injured. He had to come home for a little bit, and that's when he said, hey, you know, we have this character, it's gonna be this ball droid, and he's like, you know, I want him to have emotion and I want him to be funny and I want him to be caring. So when you hear his beeps and boops, he's like, you could feel it. He goes, would you want to do that? Would you want to do the voice of that character? I remember where I was when I got the phone call because I was like, are you fucking kidding me? He's like, yes, a million times, yes. And he goes, okay, we're coming back in a little bit. How about you come by and I'll show you some footage. So I got to see footage of 7 before anybody else got to see footage of 7. And it was, you know, think about it. We're fans of this. It's like, it was heaven. So I got to watch it and stuff like that. So when I was pitching jokes, I always saw what I was joking. It wasn't like every now and then he would pitch me when every now and then he'd be like, hey, there's this scene, what do you think? And I pitch a joke. But the real stuff that I did was like when I saw footage of it. But that first, those first couple BB-8 recordings were me saying real lines. We created dialogue for BB-8. Then they would send it to Lucas Films or ILM rather. And then ILM would try to turn into words. And we got it back the first time. And JJ was like, it sounds too much like a human's voice turning into that. We got to get a beep and boops. Yeah. Then I use a synthesizer. Then I use this. Robbie Stambler, who's an incredible sound engineer, and his father, who's a legendary sound engineer. But Robbie was on it. We played so much. And then I got a movie in Atlanta. I left. And then Bill Hader came on and did stuff. And then I really think in the end, JJ just found an app on his phone and that's what he used. But the editors told me how thankful they were because when I provided lines of dialogue, they could edit even easier because they know what Beebe's trying to say and get out.
I was going to say, yeah, do you know exactly what he was saying?
Yeah, so at the beginning, JJ and I wrote some stuff and then he let me improvise. And my improv would be off of the rough cuts of what Ray is saying and then what I assume he's saying back after JJ and I would discuss. So there's cuts of me as BB-8's voice for a bunch of scenes somewhere. And then I got to go to London and I got to like go on set for a couple of days while I was recording because they needed me to record in London immediately or in, you know, Pinewood. And it was some of the coolest things. We went on the Falcon and there's a little bit of insulation that was coming down. And when someone wasn't looking, because they were done shooting with that set, someone was giving me a tour. And when they weren't looking, I pulled the insulation to have a little piece of the Millennium Falcon and it kept ripping. So like, you know, it's almost like when you have a thread. So I was just trying to get this tiny, tiny bit. I like reached up high, I jumped up and I grabbed this tiny, tiny bit and it was connected throughout the whole thing and it went and I was so embarrassed and I put it in my pocket. I took that and I have it in a little mason jar and then I stole like, there are these little fake nuts in Luke Skywalker's cave in 7, I think it was, or 9, 7, I think. And I took two of those too when they were done filming those locations. But I was like, I gotta take something from this Falcon. I gotta take something that nobody would ever know I took, so I'm not hurting anybody's job.
So you don't have Harrison Ford on your living room wall, just in case.
Carbonite. Should.
Or as close as you can get to carbonite, which I believe doesn't exist. So just freeze him and stick him on your wall.
We should invent it.
Who knows? Oh my word. So that's an amazing experience. Do you sometimes crave that as Sonic, for example? I mean, it's Jim Carrey. Do you not want to be on set sometimes?
Oh my God. It would be amazing. I am very lucky that, you know, they're off shooting and have to be away from home and their families for months. And I get to roll up, you know, in LA in a booth, you know, wearing my pajamas, and I get to do the voice and they let me improvise and I get to see what's going on. So I'm not fighting it. But yeah, it's the coolest thing is because of press, I've gotten to know Jim Carrey well. And then me following up with him and, you know, making sure that it's so I got to not, you know, I would say we're friends, which is for someone who grew up watching him, he was my idol as a kid. And probably, you know, the movie Dumb and Dumber, I think, is a top five movie of all time for me. Dumb and Dumber, Back to the Future, like these are this is like what I based my life on as a kid. So, to be around him for press and to be around him as a human being has been incredibly inspiring. But yeah, of course, it'd be fun to be there for a day or I don't need to be there for 3 months, but I'll be there for a day or two. Also, doing that voice, it's so high in the octave that I would die if I did that voice for a full day. I would literally perish. It would then you would see, I would be writing my IMDb bio and I'd perish halfway through.
Halfway through, mid sentence.
Hey, we've called the whole thing back.
We have.
We did it.
Look at that. Do we just Harold? I'm still confused.
Kind of. May 19th, Royal Albert Hall, rejectedjokes.com. Come watch. If we get, you know, if just like 1,000 more people came, or just like,
or 10,000,
how many tickets are left?
No, there's five tickets left.
Oh, you guys gotta jump on that.
Create the tension.
I know. I just looked. There are definitely tickets to grab right now.
All right. Excellent.
And
stuff.
Last year we sold out the Apollo, which was 3,000 and change. So wow, I can't wait to see who shows up for this one. So we're psyched.
It's going to be amazing. Go along, see Ben and his friends, whose identities he will not divulge, but he totally knows who they are.
Yeah, of course.
Because he's booked their flights.
Yes, and the hotel.
Are these people that you're just grabbing? Are you hoping to get on the plane and just hoping to be coincidentally on the plane at the same time as three great improvisers?
Oh my God, Steve Carell? What are you doing on this plane? God, that'd be amazing. Steve Carell will not be there. That is a bit. He will not be there.
No, you're going to get on the plane with a whole bunch of chloroform and see what happens.
Yeah, I feel like that's fine with TSA.
It's totally fine.
I guess liquids. I would have to buy it at the airport. I'd have to buy my chloroform at the chloroform store.
Yeah, it's very hard to get it through security. They frown upon that sort of thing. But Ben, I wish you all the best. I hope to be there to see it in the flesh.
I can't wait.
It's going to be amazing. So go to rejectedjokes.com or the Royal Albert Hall website. Pick up your tickets, folks. Go see Ben Schwartz and friends. In the meantime, I'm off to finish your mini biography. There's a lot to get through. We've talked about a lot.
You got
to
do it. Just do it. Just finish it up. Make it sing.
I will make it sing. Absolutely. All right, Ben Schwartz, it's been a pleasure. Thanks, Ben.
Bye, buddy. Thanks so much, Chris.
Okay, that was Ben Schwartz, folks. And if you liked what you heard and you want to hear and see Ben Schwartz and friends perform at Ben Schwartz and friends, well, then you're in luck, because once again, they will be performing live at the Royal Albert Hall on Sunday, May 19th. And go to royalalberthall.com or rejectedjokes.com. But be quick. Seats are selling fast, folks. They are selling fast. Right, that's enough for me. I'm off to add a sixth bit of trivia to Ben Schwartz's IMDb page. It's going to say, appeared on the Empire podcast in 2024. Didn't appear to immediately regret it. Which is unusual, you'd have to say. Thanks for listening. See you next time. Bye-bye.